This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth.
It's Tuesday, the 10th of June. I'm Stuart Lohman. Tensions and negotiations between the United States and China remain a central focus for global markets. US President Donald Trump has described trade talks with China as not easy, but says progress is being made. In this clip from our partners at Bloomberg, he updates reporters on negotiations, highlights past tariff policies, and outlines what he believes is at stake for both countries.
We are doing well with China. China's not easy, just like your home country is not easy there. I think we're doing very well. They're over there now. I'm only getting good reports. It's a little early, but they'll be calling in soon. In fact, probably when I get back, I'll have my first call from them. We want to open up China. And if we don't open up China, maybe we won't do anything. But we want to open up China. It'll be a great thing for China, a great thing for the rest of the world.
Are you willing to lift export controls when it comes to China? Did you give your negotiators any sort of limitations?
We're going to see. Look, China has been ripping off the United States for many years. Nobody charged them 10 cents. No president had the courage to charge China for whatever reason. They didn't want to do it. I took in hundreds of billions of dollars. I put on tariffs on China when I got in first term. And we took in hundreds of billions of dollars. And then I did it again, but I did it for a lot of others. If you look at the stats, the deficit last month was cut in half. Everybody was shocked. I wasn't shocked. I think a lot of the people at this table weren't, because they saw the billions of dollars that were pouring in, and the tariffs hadn't even started yet, just about. They weren't cars. They were in some countries at a very minor level. And we cut the deficit in half, and it was a big story a couple of days ago. They said, I don't believe one of the announcers on a business network went wild, said, I can't believe these numbers. Those numbers are good. The numbers are going to be very good. I think we're going to have a great 4 years.
Democratic Alliance Federal Council Chair Helen Ziller says she is leaning toward running for mayor of Johannesburg. Speaking to my BizNews colleague Chris Stain, Ziller outlined the political resistance she expects to face and contrasted her focus on service delivery and poverty with what she calls the ANC's continued emphasis on race. Let's take a listen.
Well, I would imagine many residents are rejoicing at the prospect, but I would imagine that there are politicians who are up in arms. I wish I could have been a fly on the wall yesterday. How do you think Premier Panyasa Lesufi feels about the prospect of you as mayor?
Well, he will pull out all stops to stop me, no doubt about that. So will Herman Mashaba. He's played the race card already. But as I keep saying, you know, we are not interested in racial conflict. We're interested in beating poverty. So for us, it's poverty. For other politicians, it's race.
How do you think your mayorship would impact the African National Congress in Gauteng?
Well, I think there would be some who would feel neutral and possibly even positive about it, and some who would be vehemently opposed to it.
Well, but how would it impact the party itself, its future?
We've always had that. I mean, you know, we've always had the ANC opposing us vigorously and vehemently and playing the race card against us and doing all of those things. That's what they do. Nothing new. And it won't be new again this time. It's always like that. And we say, listen, we're talking about poverty. You can talk about race.
And how do you think your mayorship or your potential mayorship would impact the Democratic Alliance's fortunes in the 2026 municipal elections?
Well, if I decide to run, I first have to compete with very talented people in the DA. So it's certainly not a foregone conclusion that I would get it. But, you know, if I were to be the candidate that got it, I would certainly do my best to build a very good team, a cohesive team, manage any coalition as best we could, and then go out to achieve results. That's the only way to do it. Go out to achieve results, know where you're aiming, get a plan, a realistic plan. Have timelines, have markers on the road, and go and get it done.
Institute of Race Relations Chief Executive John Endres weighed in on the growing speculation around Helen Ziller's potential run for Joburg mayor. Speaking on the Daily Friend podcast, He explained why control of Gauteng's metros, and especially Johannesburg, is a high-stakes political and economic prize, not just for the DA, but for the country as a whole.
Is this a prize worth the cost and the risk? And I would argue yes. And the reason is that if you look at the statistics of Gauteng, which is the smallest province in South Africa, it occupies just 1.5% of South Africa's surface area. It has a quarter of South Africa's population. So in terms of population, it's huge. It's the biggest province by population. In terms of economy, it produces one third of the country's entire output, 33%, despite being so small. And in terms of personal income tax contributions, 48.1% come out of the province of Gauteng. So the province is very important. And most of the economic value and the population in the province is concentrated in the three metros. So in Johannesburg, Tshwane, and Ekurhuleni. It's a prize worth fighting for the DA. And that means that it's worth investing a lot into winning that prize in terms of resources, in terms of campaigning, in terms of spending, in terms of recruitment, but also in terms of personal cost, which is what Helen Zille will pay if she does do this. So, you know, the prize waiting at the end had better be worth it, and it is worth it. So it's a very high stakes decision for Helen Zille to make on a personal level, for the DA to make as a party, but it's also a high stakes decision for South Africa as a whole and for Gauteng and for Johannesburgers. And what I find so intriguing about this notion is that what I see around me as a resident of Johannesburg is really a great state of despondency and depression at the state of our city. You know, Johannesburgers are quite proud of their city. They don't like the way it's looking at the moment. They don't like the way it's being run, or run down more accurately. And they would love to do something about this. And to have somebody with big name recognition like Helen Zille and with a formidable reputation for delivering and for performing turnarounds attached to her, coming to Johannesburg and saying, okay, let's get this fixed, I think is going to galvanize public sentiment in Johannesburg, not only from people who are inclined to align with the DA, but even from opponents. You know, people like you mentioned Adam Habib, who's maybe not always aligned with the DA. Ferial Hafaji, Kayad Langa, we've seen all these people on Twitter grudgingly admitting that, you know, it's not ideal for somebody like Helen Zille to come in and take the reins. But given the state of Johannesburg and the love that people have for Johannesburg, they want it to be fixed. And if somebody, a serious person like Helen Zille, can be convinced to do so, I think that is something that many Johannesburgers will get behind.
On this week's Sunday show, United Independent Movement President Neil de Beer outlined how he foresaw South Africa's trajectory over the next 10 years. Speaking to Chris Steyn, he sketched two possible futures, one of economic collapse and the other reliant on major policy reform and international alignment. He warned that the country's current path risks scaring off investment.
Chris, it's going to go two ways. It's going to be belligerent, and it's going to be an entity that will go from dust to dust. I'm talking about those roving scenarios of empty shops, failed malls, no more retail, less and less farming, less and less food security. All countries will align with us. No one can argue that America's attention on our country brought attention home to the people here. So it's going to be either or, not if. We are going to go down the drain in the next 2-3 years, where we have no more fiscal input, where we have no more companies wanting to provide us with FDI, unless we change the laws. And the laws must be the laws of attraction that allow people to look at our country as positive, not as a negative. But Chris, they're not, because the mining sector is writing worse BEE laws. We have the new BEE system. We have more 100 billion into black management. We now have the Employment Equity Act, Chris, that tells you who you can and cannot appoint in your own business, should you have 50 people or more? And then finally, there's exchange control. You put that together, that's not a package of investment, that's a hand grenade. That's a package IED that will explode economically into your face. In Vrachtag, we're not getting it right, Chris. We're not getting the flow right where we can say to each other, ta-ra, no more red tape, here's red carpet. Red tape gone, red carpet here. And the problem lies, you've got people in the economy, people in government that are twats. They are absolutely twats. They are clueless. They have no competency. I mean, we're still chasing Chris. People that are in Praza, that are spooks, that are getting paid. And it's not the only, it's in the SASSA system, where billions of our money are paid to ghost workers. And now they launch a program, tell us who you are. Why, what? You've got a government department that's launching a new program. Tell us who you are. You don't know who's working for you. So you have to launch an internal governmental program. Tell us who you are. Yeah, but yes, Mal. So if we can't even count the people that are alive working for us, Chris, how do we know who's dying out of the system? And therefore, I know every Sunday we bang at that, but I am clear. It's the laws that must be changed. It's the ANC that must be removed. And a new government must come in. It's going to be a coalition government, but it's going to start somewhere. And I see yesterday Joburg celebrating at various places the new cleanup strategy. And to mock that all, we get a news clip this morning that Madam Helen Ziller might be putting up her name for mayor of Joburg next year. So that's breaking news when I wake up this morning. Now, to a lot of people, that will send icicles down their back because they know if she comes in there, there's a broom she brings with. And I'm telling you right now, if that is going to be the strategy, that the DA is going to go back there and try and encapsulate the mega cities, well, it's better than what we've got. And at the end of the day, Chris, it's here on our doorstep. The problem is we're running out of intellectual capacity, intellectual prowess, and intellectual capability, not for now, but for the future. So I hope there's a plan that this country gets up and takes on the people that lied in the previous elections that broke our cities in the way they did.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Farm attacks and rural safety are once again in the spotlight, and the DA has now released a 10-point plan to tackle the crisis. In an interview on BizNews TV, DA police spokesperson Ian Cameron explained to my colleague Christine why a specialized approach is needed, starting with how rural policing must differ from the models used in urban areas or other crimes.
So the DA continues to call for a more specialized approach with regards to farm attacks. You can't use an urban policing model or a model that would work with regards to fighting abalone poaching or infrastructure theft and do the same thing with rural safety. So you need a specialized component. And that's the first point of the 10-point plan, to say that you have dedicated detectives that can specifically zoom in on farm attacks. You've got dedicated intelligence services that can specifically zoom in on verifying and processing and operationalizing intelligence and information in rural areas, and that we really start building a prosecution-led investigation model where we can zoom in on whether it's syndicates or gangs or whatever the grouping or individual is targeting a specific rural area. Remember that we very often see a mix that You might have farm attackers that are also involved in, for example, stock theft. And stock theft is a heavily syndicated operation, and therefore we need a specialized approach. That includes the second point, the strengthened rural intelligence service. And then the criminal justice system, broadly speaking, is the integration between the prosecution and the investigation. You know, it sometimes feels like detectives in the South African Police Service, and sometimes rightly so, always blame the NPA. But then sometimes I speak to members of the NPA and they then blame detectives again. And it's this to and fro of both, which becomes quite frustrating. So we need a better integration there. Furthermore, we say that it should be considered priority crimes, and that capacity should even be strengthened inside DPCI, the Hawks, to investigate these matters and combat them. And then something that I think is critical is to really institutionalize partnerships with stakeholders on the outside. So whether it's community safety structures, you know, farm watches, community policing forums, etc., but seeing what we can do to better empower those structures to do more. Police do not have the capacity to really combat crime effectively in the country, and it's going to take a long time to get to that point. So we don't have a choice but to incorporate the private sector, incorporate community structures, and then obviously see what we can do to, for example, pull in municipal law enforcement, which can also play a huge role. And then the last three things, Chris, is to rebuild trust, to restore the trust deficit that's between the police and communities. The only way of doing that is what I've already mentioned, is to have an integrated approach where you actually have results. We don't see the same criminal back out on the street, once again out on bail or later on parole, when you know that there's no way that the relevant person has been rehabilitated and once again commits the same offense. And the last two is supporting emerging farmers, making sure that you build a very, very strong network there. And as a part of that as well, that speaks to engaging traditional leadership and pulling them into the local rural safety model, because they've got a significant amount of influence.
We close today's show with a warning shot for Apple. Speaking to Bloomberg's Romain Bostic on the close, Gerber Kawasaki President and Chief Executive Ross Gerber said the tech giant is falling behind in the AI race. He criticized Apple's incremental updates to Siri, called for a complete rebuild or acquisition, and said competitors like Microsoft and Meta are pulling ahead. Let's take a listen.
The main thing that everybody cares about is our Apple devices are dumb. Siri is clueless and doesn't work. And here we are using apps on our Apple phone like Perplexity and OpenAI and others that are just doing wonderful things for us. And Apple isn't even at this party. So what we want to see is Apple taking aggressive steps to redo their entire operating system around AI versus these sort of incremental attempts at making Siri better, and we just didn't get that today, and it's really disappointing.
There's been a lot of reporting, both by Bloomberg as well as the Financial Times and the New York Times, about this idea that Apple did try that, but apparently one of the mistakes, in the words of those reports, was that they tried to basically build upon Siri rather than starting from scratch in the way that some of these other AI companies did. I don't quite understand all the technology behind that, but I am curious if maybe there is an argument to be made for them to just go back to the drawing board, start from scratch, or alternatively, just try to buy someone out.
Yeah, 100%. You know, you can't fix bad technology by adding good technology to bad technology. In fact, what they have to do is start over. And there's many places they can start. One would be maybe just investing in companies like Perplexity and doing what Microsoft did early on, because Copilot has already been integrated into Microsoft systems. And I have to say, a lot of this stuff is really great. You know, it's new, but it's great. And, you know, I had Copilot write me a letter the other day, and it did a pretty good job of it. And so Apple's just so far behind, and with all the resources and the money they're spending on R&D. And the other thing that they need to be extremely concerned about is we all now kind of know the next big thing are glasses. I was testing the Meta glasses and I was super impressed. Like, they've come a long way with these Ray-Bans, and I would actually wear, like, I like Ray-Bans. And like, the glasses work really good. And Apple Vision Pro, which was really meant to be like a precursor to what's next, was really kind of a failure for a lot of reasons, and mostly because it was just such a big, clunky thing, and they never developed anything good on it to watch. But as we move to the glasses, now we've got Johnny Ive working with OpenAI, and that's what they're working on is glasses in my mind, and that's the future. So Apple's now falling further and further behind, and not only do they have a threat against the App Store, soon they're going to have a threat that's really going to possibly hurt their phone sales.
And that's it for today's briefing. Thank you for watching. Remember to subscribe to the YouTube channel below. And if you're listening on the podcast channels, please follow us. Until next time, cheerio.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking.